Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we reimagine the future of customers as customer expectations continue to evolve. And today, I am so excited we have a great guest, but first, I'm Alyssa Nolte.
And I am Lindsay Rios.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation, so let's get right into it. Lindsay, what is your hot take?
My hot take. I think CEOs should stop firing their sales leaders when they can't forecast accurately. They should instead bring in support so then they can actually learn how to properly forecast. Because the spoiler alert here, just in case CEOs don't know this, is that when we become sales leaders for the very first time, whether it be like just a sales manager, you know, or a head of sales or whatever, I don't mean like just a sales manager like that, by the way, but I mean like whatever your first sales leadership role is, there is actually no like a training or like person who says, by the way, this is how you forecast revenue for a business. We just get given the responsibility, and the higher up we get, the stronger the stakes are.
So there's a lot of things there, because I have worked as a consultant for a lot of large companies, and forecast is like the only thing that people get measured on, right? Like, you bring in a leader and every Monday they want to have a meeting and say, okay, what's our forecast? And you're right. They're former sellers who only ever had to do the action of making the forecast come to life rather than actually making the forecast.
Right. And even when we're sellers, we still don't get taught. We get the, please Slack me your best case, most likely, and commit every Friday. And it's literally like everyone just fingers in the wind, like,
right.
Okay, my gut says this. And you also get like a complete different amount of like guesses, essentially. And then you just round it all up and it just becomes one big giant guess. It's just the worst.
Well, and you're just asking for people to either one, be wrong unintentionally, or two, be wrong intentionally. Because I interviewed a seller once upon a time who said he would keep sure things in his back pocket.
Uh-huh.
So that he could be the hero of the day when the hit the forecast.
Yeah, there's all kinds. I mean, there's so much to unpack about how no one hardly ever gets taught how to actually forecast. And then, you know, as you get into leadership roles, you might start getting taught, or you figure out on your own, like many of us have, myself included, where you go, oh, okay, there's some like math we can do here, right? If this is in our pipeline now and our close rate is this and our sales cycle is this, then we should ideally be at this. But it's also not that simple either. And so what I don't love is seeing all the time this notion of you have a really great sales leader. You like all the other qualities probably and skill sets line up, but they can't accurately tell you on a consistent basis where you should show up. And so therefore, when you're the CEO and you go to the board and you can't then tell, you know, them, then they just go, oh, well, then the sales leader doesn't know the business well enough. So they need to go. And it's like, well, what a disruption to the entire organization.
Now. Well, and a vicious cycle, right? Like, and you're not solving the root problem. You're going to kind of keep axing people, and that's never going to actually achieve any of your goals.
Now, you might get lucky like I did, get an exec coach at one point when I was a sales leader, and gave me some great foundations of how to start thinking about it. And then I was able to also be in an org where I had a RevOps manager, you know, and data person. And then the support from my coach, and I go, ooh, I've got it. I've got these handful of ways, and actually build that muscle and be able to figure it out. But that's really rare that ends up happening. So that being said, if I could get CEOs to just knock that off instead and invest in this person that you otherwise think is fantastic for your org, and teach yourself as the CEO and everyone else in the org on how to do this, then there you go. Problem actually solved.
So let's speak to the CEOs in the audience right now. If you could give them one thing to start doing to move towards this direction of not having a sales leader who doesn't have the skills, training, knowledge, or understanding of how to forecast, what would you have them do? What's the one step they should start with?
I mean, I would actually just ask some questions. I'd do a little discovery, you know, with that sales leader and asking them, hey, did anyone ever teach you what it's like to forecast for a business? I highly doubt almost any of them will go, yes. In fact, I had a course or I had a sales leader or something that really taught me how this works. Maybe they've been like, oh, I've read things or I've downloaded assets or maybe something like that potentially, but probably not something super, super structured. So if that's the case, then I would ask them, what do they think would be the best way to support them on teaching them how to do so? So that would be one. I would also ask, can you just walk me through how you do it now? And just having an open conversation, because if the CEO knew how to do it, then they could be the one to teach them. And that's not obviously the case here, right? So I think just the CEOs in the audience should just take a step back and realize, you know what? I don't actually know how to do this either. It's not the same thing as the like P&L and financial models and all right. of that. It's a bit different. So just everyone take a step back and go, you know what? We as an org, we don't really know how to do this. So therefore, let's find someone who does so they can teach us so that we can.
Yeah. And sometimes forecasting to me feels like a little bit of math, a little bit of art, a little bit of magic, and mm-hmm. a little bit of voodoo. And like this whole thing that just doesn't seem like easy to do. It's not easy by any means. And I feel like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's about 75,000 different ways to get to your forecast. But that might be a symptom of the fact that we haven't really taught people how to do it. So they're just making their own way.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day who is a really seasoned sales leader. And she admittedly, because kind of we're on this topic, she's like, yeah, I didn't know either. And she went through the CRO school through Pavilion. And that was one of the things they talked about. And they talked about the concept of the cohort forecast, which basically just means that you have to use the likelihood of something closing within a set period to be able to forecast, which is one of the big keys for sure in it. What happens is a lot of times people just go, here's what's our pipeline right now. And our win rate's 25%. So I'm just going to multiply it by 25% and there will be our result, which absolutely gets you in trouble. But even so, to your point, that's one part of it. It's a big part, but it's not all of it. There's the voodoo part. There's the gut feeling that you kind of have to have about what you think is going to happen. There is also that what's happening while we're in the quarter or the year or the month, whatever the time period is. Because the problem with using the math part is all it is saying, here's what's happened in the past to predict what will likely happen in the future. But now, especially the last couple of years, we've seen this economy start doing some pretty wacky things. And so you might now be in quarter where things are not going how they used to. And that's going to affect you. So you also need to have methodology that tells you how things are going like real time. Your boots on the ground is kind of like what I call it. So it's really hard, to your point. If it wasn't, it wouldn't be such a pain point for so many people. But it's a high stakes thing, because the problem is that when CEOs, when founders go to their boards and startups or wherever, and they can't consistently tell them what they're supposed to be hitting, it makes it look like they don't know their business.
Right.
And so that's obviously a problem. So we have to be able to teach everybody how to look at things in a way that says, we know our business, we know where we're likely going to end up. And if we don't end up there, here's probably why, versus just, we're going to hit this number because the math said so. And then when you don't, you're like, well, we had some stuff fall out or whatever. Like, that's not the same thing.
So one of the reasons I reached out to you, I came across your LinkedIn profile, and one of your headlines is no more poopy pipelines. So I have to hear more about this. Tell me more about what that even means.
So I guess this has been going on for so long. Back when I was a sales manager for the first time at a tech company, I just really disliked that notion of like, hey, you know, so the CEO is going to go to the board, you know, so we really need the pipeline to be clean. So no close dates that are in the past and stuff like that. all that ever incentivized was AEs to just push their close dates out.
Right.
Not actually if the deal should be in the pipeline or anything else about it at all. And so most of the sales managers kind of just focused on what did Salesforce look like? Is it quote unquote up to date? But for me, I was like, yeah, but is it even a good pipeline? Who cares about if it's up to date, you know, the date? So I started focusing on teaching my reps on how to use their own pipeline to actually predict if they were going to even meet their own goals for that month. It was a monthly sales cycle at the time. And one of the things I used to do, because salespeople are notorious for keeping things in the pipeline longer than they ever should.
Yeah. And just keep moving and keep moving and
yeah,
keep changing the stakeholder and the scope and
yep,
price
all
keeps
of it.
Changing and it just sits in prospecting or whatever your first initial stage is forever.
Yeah, forever. And so I would just be like, let's just be really real for a second. If you do a phenomenal job, only a third of what's in this pipeline right now is even going to close. And that's if you do a really good job. Everything that should be allowed to be in this pipeline, only a third at any given time is going to close. So if that's the case, do you think that what's in here like is realistic? And, you know, obviously, usually like half of it would be like, no, like, cool. Because if this deal here is not going in your next commission check, it doesn't belong here.
Right.
You can still talk to them. They don't disappear just because they're not in the pipeline. And so I started calling him when people had crappy pipelines. I just started calling poopy pipelines. And that was just a phrase I used. So anyone who's ever worked with me as a sales leader knows Lindsay doesn't like poopy pipelines. And it's just stuck. And so fast forward to this day, one of the things I help organizations do is forecast properly. But what that's the symptom of having a poopy pipeline, which is you can't forecast accurately, but the root cause is that the whole pipeline is not being managed properly. And there's so many versions of what that means. And it starts with the people, the salespeople that are putting everything in there. So I don't like poopy pipelines, and I'm trying to educate people more and more on how to not have them.
Well, and I think this is a systemic problem that is going to be not just a sales like leader problem or a sales manager problem. I worked with an organization for a while as an outside consultant, and they had terrible forecasting because they were incentivizing things that actually ruined their forecast. So they had a bunch of fields in their Salesforce instance that were required. However, in the stage of the sale that they were required before you could move on to like the next set of inputs for your CRM, you couldn't possibly know that information at that point. So people were just putting in garbage because they had to move on to the next point in order to hit their whatever next section they wanted to get to. And except what they maybe did or didn't know and or did know and didn't care is that that specific data was being used to create a strategic forecast for like the exact level. And so they are running these decisions off of this series of fields in Salesforce that are actually fake data.
Yep.
It was dummy data.
Dummy data. And that's where a lot of these early stage companies really get in trouble too. When you have
it was an early stage, that's the worst part. It's like a
even when I worked at HubSpot, I was like, "This is a bunch of crap, right?" But the thing about really really large orgs is when they have enough data, they have enough of a buffer. They can get away with that kind of stuff a lot.
Exactly.
Easier. But when you're not in large scale environment and you're in these scaling startups of any stage, A, B, C, D, even, you are going to your point, you're going to have sales people report to usually their sales manager, the finger in the air version. But all that data in the CRM, in the pipeline, is being used from higher ups to do the quote unquote math to make a forecast that's going to be a bunch of garbage. And you go and you say things when you're going to go for funding, or you go to the board and you say, we've got this much revenue in the pipeline and we've got this much that should be coming out, and then it doesn't happen. It's do or die. This is where you fail. So that's why I am really passionate about it, because if you really can't do this whole motion properly, it's going to be a huge part of why you don't make it. It's hard enough. Most of us are not going to make it as startups.
No, I mean, it's like, what, 1 out of 10 actually makes it to year two or something like that? Like, yeah. It's insane.
But this is part of why, because this push for one, like, perceived revenue pipeline growth, which is a lot of times a bunch of crap. I coach founders as well, and, like, that are in their founder-led sales motion. And one of mine, I just, like, we had this whole talk about poopy pipelines, and he ended up coming back to me, you know, a few days later. He said, I got real. I took out half of the stuff that was in my, it was not real. You're right. And I said, now you have a fire under your butt too, because you had this fake sense of how much revenue you think you really had going for you, but you don't. Yeah. And he goes, exactly.
There's a lot of founders who have created, they look at their pipeline and they get complacent, because if 25% of this hits, then we'll be golden. But what they're not recognizing is that it's 25% of qualified opportunities will hit, not 25% of everything you type into your CRM.
Yeah. And if you're doing, like I said, if you're doing it correctly and you're only putting in qualified opportunities into your pipeline, you have to remember, like, even then, you're always only going to close. Everyone, some places are a little different, but like 30%, call it, you know, is a strong win rate. So if you do it right, things happen. Bad timing, rifts, budget cuts, a stakeholder is now left. You find out, actually, we can't come to terms in our legal, you know, stuff. Whatever it might be, there are enough reasons that's not going to close within the given sales cycle. So if you put poop in, you will get poop out, and you have to stop this, like, sense of inflation. And you also have to have consistency. That's the whole other thing about it. You have to be consistent about what your definitions are, about how your pipeline works, how you forecast. A best case should be the same version of a best case from every rep.
Right. Well, and I think as you grow and scale, and as you get bigger, and as you, the founder, the owner, the leader, get further away from the day-to-day of that, you have to work, I think you have to work twice as hard to keep that governance in place without, like, stifling what makes your salespeople great, right? Because you can go the other way, and you can have your salespeople spending all of their time doing data entry, doing forecasts, doing cleaning, and not spending time with their customers. Like, I talked to a different organization, and they said on average, their sales reps spend 20 to 25 hours a week doing data entry or spending time in meetings with leaders justifying the forecast.
Oh, yeah. That's my other, like, sub hot take of the hot take is, I, like, get rid of forecasting meetings. What a freaking waste of time. Don't ask them to send it to you either. If you do it right, it's in the CRM.
Right. Well, especially if you're going to make them do the CRM and then make them send you an update and send an account plan and come to a meeting to talk about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Everyone does. I'm like, stop it. Knock it off.
Right. And the meeting makes sense if you need help. Like, right. Like, if I have a leader and I say, hey, I am trying to close this deal, I could really use your advice, support, input, firepower. Can we get on a call? But as an ad hoc, not a every Monday from 8 to 12, yeah, we do a 4-hour.
We all talk about
the things about our deals.
Yeah, that we can all see on our own time. Absolutely not. In fact, any CEOs that I've ever worked with, I start to kind of train them when they ask me like this. They go, here's where, see this dashboard, see this report. Here it is right here.
Right. Teach the man to fish. Don't bring him the fish, right?
Because I tell my salespeople, any of my sales orgs, if I'm going to ask you to be really good about your forecasting and go through motions of how to get better at it and all this stuff, I promise you, I will never ask you to additionally Slack me these numbers because you have them here. There's even like a game you talked about wrong, you know, incentivizing in the wrong way and stuff. There's actually a fun game you can do to get your AEs to not do that, like, oh, I hold things in my back pocket or whatever. And if you reward the person who is the most accurate at forecasting by the end of your quarter. I had quarterly. I haven't had a monthly sales cycle in a long time. You'll see some great honesty there, because it's not about who did. It's not like, oh, who sold the most or whatever. No, it's the person who is literally the most accurate. So if you sold 100,000 and, you know, you said it was going to be 80, you won't win if someone else got 100% and still sold less than you, because it was about really understanding what you're going to be able to close.
Right. And being able to be honest and accurate with the organization. So I everything you're saying, like, on the surface seems like common sense. So why is it not common practice?
So that's an excellent question. I think a few things. It's just a little bit of that toxic, this is how we've always done things kind of like thing, you know? Yeah. And kind of going back to what I said in the beginning, where unfortunately majority, I'm not saying there's nobody out there, but majority of us don't get taught how to really forecast. We just get asked the question and we all kind of go into the same motions. So I think that's kind of part of it. And then other than that, you know, I think that it's a little bit of a symptom of this growth at all costs mentality we've had for so long, versus nowadays, you know, the last couple of years, things have shifted a bit. You know, now being profitable is actually more exciting, or just being a sustainable, healthy business is a little bit more exciting. And so I think this is a great time for orgs to make some of these systemic changes. But I do think that startup, like unicorn, hyper growth stuff is a kind of a big part of why we went this route in the first place.
Hopefully we are moving in a direction of being grounded in reality and being able to successfully forecast and not just faking it till we make it and hoping for the best.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, that was the, that's been the intensity of startup, you know, world. And while I don't want to take any credit away from startups that have made it, you know, IPO'd or acquired in a great way or any of that, we all got to admit that there's an element to it where it was like, there was some great luck there.
Oh yeah.
And we 100%. Didn't know why it went the way it did. And
a little bit of luck, a lot of bit of who you know already, and the a very small amount of product market fit.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that Slack wasn't already a major player in the space, for example, but like, did COVID propel
yes.
something like a Slack? Yes.
Absolutely. You can't tell me that Zoom was far and away the market leader before COVID, because I had people who wanted to meet on Google Meet and BlueJeans and WebEx and all of those different platforms. And then suddenly Zoom took all everyone because it was easy to use and they had a huge launch in COVID. And now that COVID is done, we're using some variation of that.
Yep. Yeah. So there's so many things that go into why companies have gone the way they have, but it allowed some places to get away with not having to do forecasting, actually, for example, because here's the thing. If you're a sales leader at an org and you aren't accurately forecasting, however, you guys are still hitting your number, no one's going to be.
Right. But yeah. Here's the problem, though, and that comes back to the complacency later, is that when the times change, you won't know if you hit those numbers because you were good, because your product was good, or because the timing just worked out for you.
Yeah.
For when the moment ends, will you still be able to hit those numbers, or will your pipeline go from, you know, hero to zero overnight?
Yeah. The problem is you don't know how to do it on purpose. And so if you don't know how to do it on purpose, then that's not something you can replicate. And obviously I'm very passionate about the sales leader role in general, because it's one of the most roles that, you know, out there. And a large part of it is, if you don't learn how to do things on purpose as a sales leader, thing goes for a marketing leader too, and scaling, then there's an issue there. So when you exist at an org that took off and you didn't actually have a huge part in doing it on purpose, that doesn't mean you're going to do it again somewhere else. So there's some great side advice here for founders looking for their next sales leader, is to like actually dig into, did they help do these things on purpose?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to like all the sales leaders I've ever encountered. Like, do I believe that they would know how to be successful on purpose, or are they successful because they work for a strong brand, or because the moment was right? And it's an interesting kind of thought exercise to say, like, confidently, okay, yeah, this person knew what they were doing on purpose. This person maybe was looking into it a little bit. But on that note, considering all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who is doing it right? Who is leading the charge on changing the way we do this?
I think there's a lot of really amazing people out there, to be quite honest, that I've gotten to open my eyes to now that I joined the world of LinkedIn about a year and a half ago. I mean, I was on there, but
not active. Yeah.
But not active. There's a gal that comes to mind though, that I really have always resonated with from day one of us meeting. And she is a post-sales leader. She's a customer success side of the business leader. Unfortunately, us sales leaders don't have a great reputation for thinking about the customer enough.
Yeah. A lot of my guests are post-sales, and we hear a lot of shit talking on salespeople on the podcast usually.
I know. And that's okay. I actually have led customer success a couple times, so I didn't know that was such a unique thing about me, as being like a sales leader who actually is very customer centric, but I've now come to learn that. And so that being said, Kelly Olson is a phenomenal post-sales fractional leader. And she and I have done some little rants from time to time together. And, you know, just when we talk about overall go-to-market strategy in general, she has such a great point of view, period, on go-to-market strategy, post-sales strategy, and the alignment you need to have from day one. And that's probably why we like to rant on it together. I actually had done this video some months ago where I was just like, one of my bugaboos is how organizations think of customer success as the last organization to build out.
Yeah.
Just like
it's the like, oh, we've made it, so now what do we do?
Now we'll do that.
Now
we'll do that. And even when they do, it's never valued equally as much as sales or marketing. Post sales leaders don't get paid the same amount.
Right.
Like none of it. It's always afterthought. And I'm like, and I would argue that is, if I had to pick one, the most important department.
Right.
So she and I really aligned on that, and I think she probably resonated with me quickly. That strong point of view too, but I think she's just a great person that puts really great points of view and suggestions out there on LinkedIn. And if anyone has a chance to work with her, like, she'll help transform your whole org, not just get good customers.
I love that. And if someone is really resonating with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
You can now find me on LinkedIn.
For the last year and a half or so?
The last year and a half, that is where I'll be. I mean, my website's linked on there, but that's just for people that if I'm, if you're my ICP and you want to see how I operate with companies. But no, if you want to hear more about Poopy Pipelines, if you like dance parties on Friday, and if you want dinner recipes, you follow me on LinkedIn. And if you don't like any of those things, it's totally fine. Don't find me on LinkedIn.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. This was a great conversation.
Thank you for having me.